Hello, welcome to this afternoon's meditation class for the experts. Well, not really expert, but the beginner's class. The introduction to meditation, a series of four lessons starting today. That class is in the room to my right. This is the ongoing meditation class for those who've meditated before and who could sit at least 45 minutes, and I think that because it's a longer time to sit meditation. So if you haven't meditated before, you'll find this a little bit difficult. So for those people coming for the first time to these meditation classes here in Buddhist Society in Nolamara, please, it's in the room to my right. This is the ongoing class. And in the ongoing class, every week we mention a different aspect of meditation. We don't give the overview, but we focus on some of the problems and difficulties people face in meditation, the techniques to overcome them, so that little by little you can learn how to be more and more peaceful and more successful in your meditation. And first of all, please know that meditation is a very peaceful activity, and it shouldn't really take much effort. When people do have effort, they usually get headaches and other problems. So here we're learning how to just relax our body and relax our mind. Basically, learning how just to watch without interfering, to be aware without doing anything. That is just a basic overview of meditation. But of course, the biggest problem which keeps coming up time and time and time again in meditation is people think too much. And last night in the guided meditation I gave before the Friday night talk, I did mention one method to overcome that thinking mind, which is actually to put space between you and your thoughts. And that metaphor, that way of looking at your mind and the one watching your mind, is very helpful, and people have found it one of the most effective ways of learning how to let go of all this thinking so you can be quiet and peaceful and allow the meditation to go very deep. And that method, again, really works because you will find that the thoughts inside of your mind go on and on and on and on, taking you away from peacefulness when you get involved in those thoughts. And the word involved, you get really caught up in them. In this metaphor, when I'm sitting here and there's a movie happening in front of me on the TV screen or in a movie theater, when there's a space between us, then there's no involvement at all. You can actually learn how to let go. But when you're really caught up in the movie, it's amazing what people could do. I told that nice little anecdote in the Opening the Door of Your Heart book. I mention this because we have a visitor from Jamaica at our monastery. And one of my friends went to Jamaica about 30, 40 years ago. And he went to a very rough town in Jamaica. Jamaica had the biggest murder rate in the world. And he went to a drive-in movie theater. And he couldn't believe in the drive-in movie theater in upcountry Jamaica, the screen was made out of solid concrete. It may be a foot thick. And he wondered, why don't you use like a canvas screen like everybody else? And they said the reason was because in that particular town, they loved violent movies, cowboys and Indians, gangsters and police. And whenever there was a gunfight, the people in the audience would get out their guns and join in. And they would shoot at the marshal if they didn't like the marshal. They'd shoot the gangster if they didn't like him. Now, on the screen, they got that involved in what was going on. Now that is exactly what people do when you get caught up in the thoughts. You give them a reality which they don't deserve. You feel like you're right in the center of them. And you keep them going on and on and on. And all we really need to do is put some space, metaphorical space, or even imagine physical space between you and your thoughts. Project your thinking out in front of you somewhere. And imagine yourself, you know, as some observer who's watching these thoughts from a distance. It gives you some sense of objectivity rather than being caught up in them. And when you stand back and look at the thoughts as if on a screen, you are not the thoughts, you are separated from them. The thoughts are over there, you're over here. By doing that, you will find, number one, when you see the thoughts objectively, you find what a waste of time they are. And also, it gives you the ability to turn them off, pretty much at will. What am I doing this for? I'm not caught up in them, they're not really interesting, I can see them from a distance. And then you find that the thoughts can actually disappear. And you can have some silence. Please never have the idea that the thoughts will actually answer any of your problems. You've done that so many times before, trying to find the answers to problems or difficulties, especially philosophies in life. And the thoughts just give you more questions and more arguments, which is why traditionally in all of the wise religions, it is from silence you gain wisdom, not from thinking. And if we can learn how to be a little bit more silent, we're also far closer to the truth of life. And as Lao Tzu used to say, if ever when you're seeing a sunset, you think, what a beautiful sunset. If you think about it rather than seeing it, then you are just watching the words, you're not watching the sunset. Or like a cartoon, one of my favorite cartoons from Lunig, was when he had his family watching a TV in a room. And the TV on the TV was a sunset on some nature channel. And on the other half of the cartoon was an open window with the real sunset happening. But they weren't watching the real sunset, they were watching the image on a TV screen. And that is very similar. You're not watching the real life. You're watching the real life, its image, as recorded on the TV of your thoughts. So when we realize that when we look at a sunset, if we give it a name, we are just watching the names, we miss the beauty of the sunset. When I was young, I was so interested in astronomy, I started to learn the names of the stars and the constellations and get as much information as I could about them. And then that meant that when I looked at the stars at the night, I could never see the stars. What I could see is their names and what they meant or what I told they meant. And it took me so many years to learn how to forget all of those names. So I could see the sun, see the stars at night, just as everybody else could, just to see their beauty, not their names. It's the same that sometimes people come for a walk in our forest, where our monasteries are, and they give all of the names of the different species of trees. The only tree I know, and I've been here living in Serpentine about 31 years now, I just know them as gum trees. I don't know what particular species they are. And that's on purpose. Because if I knew what species they were and what subspecies and what class of which subspecies, then I would just think too much and I would never be able to appreciate the beauty of the forest. So, okay, somebody wants you. So this is the introduction to meditation classes on the room to my right. So this is where we learn how to take away the value of thinking, put some space between us and the thoughts, not to get involved in the thoughts, and then you find those thoughts, they won't last very long, and you'll have some silence. When you do have the silence, you actually be seeing things in their raw rather than what you think they are. You won't be giving them names, you'll see them for what they are. Now this is so important to get peace in meditation and also wisdom in meditation. So when you are meditating, you know what happens for so many people? They start thinking, and it's only when the thoughts are over that they say, oh my goodness, I've been thinking all the time, I've wasted so many minutes, or maybe the whole meditation. When you learn how to put space between you and your thoughts, it means you are much more aware of what you're doing. You don't get lost inside the thoughts. You're apart from them. The other simile which I like to give is a simile of being in a jungle, you don't know which way to go, you're lost in the middle of things. And if you find a tall tower, a hill, or climb the top of a tree, then from above the forest you can find your directions. You're not like caught up inside the forest, you're above it with a bird's eye view. That's like being caught up in the forest of thinking. You don't know which way to go. But if you can imagine the thinking, your thoughts as a forest, and you stand away from it, you stand apart from it, and then you actually can see the thinking from a distance, then you get your idea of what all this thinking is. You get a bird's eye view of a forest. You know which way you can go. You don't get lost. So those are some ideas about how to deal with the thinking mind, so that when you are meditating, that's one big problem that you can overcome. And it's also, if you can overcome it in meditation, you can let go of the thinking, allow it to just to stop by itself when you give it space between you, the observer, and the thoughts. You'll also find if you have any problems or difficulties in life, any disappointments in life, you don't go thinking and giving yourself a headache and losing sleep at night. Too many people do not know how to sleep efficiently. And if we can only just learn, even when we go to bed at night, put in some space between us and our thoughts. I'm over here, my thoughts are out there. Then you may be able to let go of those thoughts and have a really good night's sleep and not worry about anything. You deserve it. Okay, so that's just a little bit of instructions on how to overcome thinking. Now we're going to start our meditation, so if you want to get yourselves comfortable, whatever you wish to do, to move this, to move that, to get the body nice and comfortable before we start. Now I'm going to, as usual, give the introduction, give the guided meditation for the first 5 or 10 minutes, and then to let you go and to follow the meditation as you wish. Oh yeah, thank you. Can you please turn off your mobile phones? That's very timely. So close your eyes. In some traditions they keep the eyes open, but that just makes too many distractions. With the eyes closed, keep your awareness on your bodily feelings. Aches and pains, heat, cold, pressure. And first of all, see if you can alleviate those physical feelings by moving your body first of all. Is there anything inside your body which is still aching? Just give it kindness. The mindfulness will give you feedback to show the feeling becomes softer. And you can relax headaches, pains, tensions inside the body just by mindfulness plus kindness. You relax things part by part. when the body is nicely relaxed. Let it go. And focus on relaxing your mind, the mental world. If there are some thoughts going on in your mind, imagine pushing them out of your head onto a screen. And where you, the one who is watching, is a distance from the screen. That objectivity means you got perspective on what you're doing. It makes it possible to let go of the thoughts if you want. When you're lost in thoughts, you literally are right in the middle of them, like lost in a forest. When you push them out and you're separated from them, the one who's watching and the thoughts distant from each other, it's like having a bird's eye view. You're not in the thoughts anymore. You can fly above and beyond them into silence. It's getting very close to the end of the meditation now. Just be mindful of how you feel, how much you've relaxed, how much peace of mind there is. And in this meditation, what worked and what didn't, and why? I will now ring the gong 3 times. Please wait until the last sound from the gong vanishes. And as it does, open your eyes to end the meditation at the vanishing of the 3rd ringing of the gong. Good. So, many of you know that these Saturday afternoon meditations are streamed live. So, if those of you who can't come to the Saturday afternoon or you're overseas, the people listen in from all different countries and they have the opportunity of asking questions. Today we have 2 from Thailand and 1 from the United States. The first one, how do I deal with intense anxiety during meditation? The feeling that comes with no cause and I feel it deeply. So standard, any sort of feeling like that which comes in meditation, at least in meditation you have the opportunity to develop some awareness. So first of all, anxiety will get worse if you try and get rid of it. So instead we just investigate, what does anxiety feel like? And see if you can know anxiety well enough that you can write sort of, an A4 paper, sort of, maybe 2 or 3 pages on what it feels like. In other words, really be aware of it. Sometimes people say, I feel anxious, but people say, what does it feel like? Describe it to me. Say, well, it's just anxious, that's all. It shows you're not really aware of those emotions. So number one, really get to know it. Understand how it feels as fully as you possibly can. And then when you feel it, not deeply, as they say in this question, but you feel it fully, widely, broadly, you understand it and just the different sensations and feelings both in the mental world and the physical world, then it's pretty simple to overcome. Once you know it, as it says in the Chinese Art of War, know your enemy, know yourself, 1,000 battles fought, 1,000 battles won. It's actually knowing what this thing is, first of all. And then you can actually just experiment with just simple things like kindness. And as long as your awareness is strong enough, as I mentioned earlier, you'll notice that feeling of anxiety change. It's not the same feeling constantly from moment to moment. It changes. And if you're aware of the change, you'll notice that when you are accepting, kind, warm, embracing of those emotions, you'll find its intensity decreases. You can notice that because you're aware of what's going on. You're not trying to get rid of it, you're just getting to know it. And you'll find as it gets less and less, you'll associate The attitude which lessens things like anxiety is acceptance, kindness, basic compassion. Once you get that and you make that connection, the rest is very, very easy. You get so compassionate you can just relax the anxiety totally away. As you also relax aches and pains in the body totally away. You get to know them first of all, basic mindfulness, awareness of these problems. I mean really get to know them, that's a standard which I set for people. Can you just write down, you know, maybe 1,000 words on what the anxiety feels like? You get to know it that well. And then when you get to know it that well, add this beautiful kindness to it and you find it vanishes. Second question. I would like to practice reclining meditation as I'm getting old, which is lying down meditation. I am also getting old, and I know the person who's written this, you're not that old. But you know people do feel old. But even if you lay down and do some meditation, how many times when you go to bed at night you toss and turn, you can't find a comfortable position? And it's true that, you know, for me, I'm over 60. Actually, I'm not 62 and a half. I had my 750th birthday about a month ago. Absolutely true. I won't lie to you. I can't lie because I'm a monk. And they even gave me a cake. Happy 750th, Ajahn Brahm. 750 months since I was born. Not years. I quite like that because as a monk, the older you are, the more respect you get. So when I say I'm 750, people are like, wow, that's awesome. But anyway, unfortunately, so you know, even though I'm old, I get aches and pains now and again, still the most comfortable position for me is like sitting down or even walking when I have the right attitude to my body. In other words, I learn how to relax it. And if you can relax it sitting up, you can usually relax it laying down. But anyway, it continues. Unfortunately, I have used the technique of watching my breath or scanning my body with metta when I had insomnia or depression. It has worked well, but now whenever I try meditation laying down, I will just fall asleep peacefully. Wonderful. You know, sometimes people don't have enough sleep. You know, they suffer from insomnia. I didn't mention that in brief at the beginning of this session. That a lot of times that because we think so much, we can't just fall into a nice quiet sleep. And just that much, just being able to have a good night's sleep is a wonderful thing for you, and just letting go of thinking is a way of helping that. So it's an incredible thing to be able to sleep well at night. And now you're falling asleep peacefully, and now you complain. Wonderful. Well done. You're making a lot of progress. And so what happens next is when you know, you catch up on your sleep, because many people have sleep deficit, they don't sleep enough. And when you catch up on that, after a while you wake up and then you don't need to sleep. You know, some people can't sleep because they don't need sleep. And what one does, one just meditates, being in the present moment, letting go of all your thoughts and just being. So you can do that, but even saying that, you know, none of the person is not that old, even so, that you know, there are times in one's life where one will be sick, in hospital, you know, having to lay down. And sometimes you have to lay down for hours in hospital, all day sometimes. You can't walk because of some operation or whatever. And it is a very good to be able to learn how to meditate, you know, lying down in a hospital bed. And the way you do it is exactly the same as you do sitting meditation. You're not doing a scanning of the body or watching your breath. You're just letting go of all the past and future. Relaxing the body, sorry, first of all. Letting go of all the past and future. Letting go of all the thinking. And just allowing your mind to be in the present moment. Embracing it. The breath will come to you eventually. You don't have to go searching for it. So the thing is that to do very little and to have a lot of awareness, a lot of kindness, just to make peace, be kind, be gentle when you're laying down. That's all you need to do, and you get into the deepest of meditations as you're laying down. So exactly the same thing, relaxing your body and just letting go of the body, just relaxing the mind, being in this present moment, being kind to this moment, and just getting very deep into peacefulness. And our last question, are there any specific suttas? This is, you know, the scriptures of the Buddha, where the Buddha talks about living in the present and present moment awareness, or have they been derived by various other teachings? Now, the most obvious one is these are three suttas. They're called the Baddhekarata suttas in the middle-length sayings. So in the United States, if you look at the middle-length sayings in Pali, it's a Majjhima Nikaya, and it's called Baddhekarata. There's three suttas there. And I think they're usually called One Fortunate Night, and you'll find them there, and there you'll see little poems about letting go of the past, letting go of the future, living in the present moment. So it is actually straight from the suttas. So you can find it there. It's not from Eckhart Tolle. Eckhart Tolle took it from Buddhism. Unfortunately, that we never took out patents. We never got this idea of intellectual property rights. You know, we've got no attachments, Buddhists, which is our problem. So, you know, people take this and take that, and we let them, which is nice. But it means that sometimes people make a fortune out of these sorts of stuff, which you hear here for free. There was a fellow who came to see me over in Kuala Lumpur some years ago, a really, really rich, came from a very rich family. And because he came from a rich family, when he had some sort of psychology problems, he went all the way to United States to, I think, this, what was it called? It's one of these clinics which in Cleveland, Ohio, I think, where all these wealthy film stars and sort of rock stars go for rehab. And had a personal session with John Kabat-Zinn, who invented, who took this mindfulness business. What was it called? The actual clinic. Maya Clinic, yeah. That's the one. And he was so paid an incredible amount of money for this. And when he came to hear my talk, he said, "This is ridiculous. You know, you give your talks for free. And it's far, far, far better than I paid all this thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars for, you know, to get it from the source." I said, "Yes, it's because we don't charge for it. That's why people don't come." And there's a lot to be said of that. So you get it from the source here. So much better value for money and straight from the heart of these things. So, you know, so a lot of things come from the teachings of the Buddha or the teachings from the monks and nuns of our modern age. But you hear it here first. And so don't go spending money for this sort of stuff. You know, just can get it sort of right from the source, and it's really powerful stuff. State of the art, cutting edge. So anyway, any questions from the people here? That's the three questions from overseas. Yes, my good man.
Bhante, could you explain for me what you consider halfway decent mindfulness in meditation?
What I consider is what mindfulness?
Reasonable mindfulness and reasonable concentration. Mindfulness. What are the signs of it that
okay.
Past the point where you have the sort of like racing mind syndrome and it settles down, could you say a few words about that, and then okay. I've got some questions for what you do at that point.
Okay. Reasonable mindfulness. Now, you know that I was one of those who started the idea that mindfulness is not just a thing, it has different degrees of power. And that's an important concept to add to mindfulness. Because even when you wake up in the morning and you're half asleep, you still have mindfulness, but it's low power. You know, until you've had your first cup of coffee, you're not really awake. But you know, you're awake enough, you can find your way to the toilet, you know where the light switches are, you're not sort of unconscious. Your mindfulness is low. And you have the ordinary mindfulness of ordinary people in this world. They're aware enough of the traffic, you know, they know where the speed cameras are, they have some awareness. But again, the awareness we get in meditation is especially awareness which is focused on interesting parts of our being. The first thing is, I always say that the body awareness is usually where we start to build up some awareness, to find out actually how we feel. And you know that one of the first times I learned this, as a Western monk living in northeast of Thailand, when we went on arms round, we weren't allowed to wear shoes or any sandals, it was always barefoot, and we were always stepping on things and cutting our feet. And when my master, Ajahn Chah, saw all these band-aids which were plastered on all the Western monks' feet, he couldn't believe it. And he said, you Westerners have got stupid feet. There's a very interesting way of calling it, you know, calling feet stupid. Because it was very true. My hands were very smart, my head was very smart, but my feet were totally stupid. They didn't know what they were doing, because my mindfulness wasn't there. So little by little we learn how to be aware of our body. So we can actually feel, you know, what's going on in it. And it's incredible, you know, it really is quite worrying for the health professionals. How many people just don't know what's going on in their body? Which means you get sick and you don't see the signs. One book which I read was a heart attack cardiologist who said you don't get a massive heart attack out of the blue. It just doesn't happen that way. This is what he said anyway, I'm not a cardiologist. But he said you always have minor tremors first of all before the big one comes. But people just are so unaware they don't notice it. And that means that when the big one comes they think, wow, this shocked me. But it always was there to begin with. So because we're not aware of these things. So we start with awareness of our body. So we start to feel the body. We can understand how it is. And then once you can do that, you can apply the same thing to your mental world. And especially as you know that mindfulness-based therapies are always about getting to know your mental world, which is another terra incognita for most people. You know, suddenly you get angry, suddenly you get depressed. It's not suddenly. That built up over lots of negative mind states until it gets so bad it gets clinical. So when you start to get aware of what you're thinking, how you're feeling, then that's, you know, you're beginning to grow mindfulness. And one of the similes which I gave, you know, about getting some perspective, the thoughts over here, or emotions over here, and I'm over there. Because when you're right in the middle of it, you've got no perspective, you haven't got mindfulness, basically. You're caught up in it. That's not mindfulness. And the other simile I gave it last night as well, hand so close to my face, I can't see anything. Now, when I put it out here, I have mindfulness of my hand. I can see my hand, but I can see other things. I've got some perspective to it. That's another idea of mindfulness, the perspective. So, you know, you're not involved. You can stand back and get some sort of objective view of your emotional world. And, of course, you can see what happens next. You can understand things. And now I can see what's going on. Just like, you know, the tower above the jungle. You know, that simile I gave of going to the Mayan ruins in Tikal in central Guatemala and just going above the tree line, you can actually see where I came from that the last day. You've got the bird's eye view. You're not caught up in the jungle of your thoughts and emotions. That's what mindfulness is. So once you have that degree of mindfulness, you know, in your meditation, that degree, then you can actually start to get some peace. Because that becomes the goal. Now remember, please, you know, don't mention the word concentration. You know, you've been on too many of my retreats. Stillness, please, not concentration. That, to me, that's a dirty word. That has spoiled so many people's meditation. So once you have mindfulness, you can see how I can be more still. What am I doing which agitates my mind? And then when you go for stillness, you get more and more still. And the thing with stillness, it empowers your mindfulness. It makes it stronger and stronger and stronger. Until you get really blissed out. Yes.
So my question was where to, at that point, that's really the take-off point. When I'm saying halfway decent mindfulness, I'm saying, yeah, got it, that I'm at that point.
Yeah.
What do I do then when I've got good stillness, okay, and I'm not thinking about my personal problems because things are stable. And the mind is not running around all over the place.
Then you get very mindful of that thought, what do I do now? You notice that that is what stirs up the mind even more. So you're aware of just what you're doing inside of your head, inside of your mind, whatever you wish to call it. And actually the wisdom part of mindfulness, because in traditional Buddhism, we would never talk about mindfulness apart from wisdom. We had actually a word. This is the Thai masters, they'd always say Satipanya. Sati was mindfulness, panya was wisdom. It'd always be mindfulness, wisdom, mindfulness, wisdom, mindfulness, wisdom. In things like the suttas, Sati Sampajanya. Never Sati alone. Always with wisdom. So you're aware and you understand what to do with it. So you're aware of that thought, what do I do now? And the wisdom tells you, shut up.
Okay, so that's fine. Okay, that's good. And so my question then is, when you're at that point and you are, okay, you've either got an object of focus or you've got a mindfulness, awareness without an object, okay? Now my question is, where to from there? There are a couple of different things, you know, there's different masters that talk about stuff, and there's the idea of looking at the space between thoughts, there's the idea of looking at awareness of awareness. The stuff that's sort of at the more advanced levels of the Satipatthana Sutra, where you're looking at the flavours of the mind and mind objects and that sort of stuff. Can you say something about looking at awareness of awareness and these deeper levels, please?
Now, first of all, you always have an object. So there's always an object of your awareness. You can't have awareness without being aware of something. So sometimes when you are aware and you're not quite sure what it is, find out what it is. That is a simile of like going out from a lit room into the darkness. At first you can't see what's going on. Stay there. Don't move, don't go anywhere, don't change anything. And soon, you know, the pupils of the eyes dilate and you can start to see things. That's what happens in your meditation. If you think you haven't got an object, it means you can't understand what it is. Stay there. And let the sort of the object which you are aware of just evolve, manifest itself. So the point is, in each one of these, you're always doing something. You're trying to direct your meditation. And that means there's no more stillness. Whenever you do anything, whenever you make a choice, whenever you say, what should I do next? How should I proceed? That question is what stops the meditation developing.
No, but I'm talking about something much deeper than that, where you are not indulging in cognitions, which is what you're talking about. I'm saying past that point, when it's way past thinking, it's a feeling type state, it's like putting a spotlight or something. Even the act of focusing a spotlight is an act of will.
Yes,
I'm saying
do that.
When you have got good concentration and at that point, and you know, you've oftentimes said, and I know that you're a teacher that teaches absorption meditation techniques as opposed to other teachers in the Burmese tradition, that sort of stuff. So
no.
There may be a pathway, I don't know, but the point about it is, at that point where it's really, really subtle, okay, awareness of awareness or whatever you want to call it, could you say something about those sorts of that point?
You do absolutely nothing. You can't have awareness of awareness. You are aware that you were aware of something in the past. So you're going back in time, you've lost the present moment, number one. So when you're actually at that stage, you're very careful not to do anything. If you like your mindfulness, like the simile of the two guards, they guard you from actually doing anything. There's an old, I like to say it's jokes because people remember them. I read in the one of the in-flight magazines once, that very, very soon you'll have pilotless planes. Because pilots who drive in planes make too many errors. And just the technology is so good that, you know, if it's all done automatically, you don't really need pilots. And the reaction times of the sensors is fractions of a second. A pilot takes, you know, at least half a second to make a reaction, and sometimes it's too late. So they said in the future there will be just one pilot in the cockpit with a dog. There's only two people up front. The pilot's job is to feed the dog, and the dog's job is to bite the pilot if it touches anything. Now that is what you do in that type of meditation. You have a dog which bites you if you try and do anything. In other words, you stop.
Thanks.
So I think you get it. When you do a simile like that, which is a funny story, you actually get it. This is automatic. Don't do anything. So if you can have a dog there which bites you, whenever you try and do something, what should I do next? And then just you stop messing around. Okay. Okay, so we've gone over, but it's good stuff. So thank you for listening, and now we can pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we can go and do whatever we need to do.